You're listening to Marketplace Weekend. I'm David Lazarus, in for Lizzie O'Leary. A new book looks at the way women influence our nation, with the idea that once women reach critical mass in any given professional sphere, change starts to happen. The book is called Broad Influence: How Women Are Changing the Way America Works, and J. Newton Small is the author. He's also the Washington correspondent for Time magazine. Lizzie and Jay are old friends. They recently sat down to talk about the book.
I want to start with this concept of critical mass, because a lot of writing about women in the workplace talks about parity and everything being equal. You don't do that. What is critical mass, and why did you find it so important in this book?
Well, the idea for the book came about 2 years ago when I was covering Congress, actually, the Senate. The women of the Senate had reached 20%, and it was the first time that they were at 20%, and they really, really batted above their weight. They ended up producing 75% of the major legislation that passed the Senate that session. And I started hearing from other friends of mine, you know, one friend in the, who's in the Navy, who talked about how Navy ships had reached a similar kind of feminine tipping point where when they got to between 20 and 25%, that was the goal for all Navy ships, because that's when things really normalized and became a good situation. And then women in the corporate world talked to me about how there's this 30% club in New York and in the UK and Canada where it aims to have women reach 30% in all corporate boards, because, again, it was kind of a tipping point. And I thought, wow, that's really interesting. So I started researching this idea, and it turns out that it's pretty widespread, and not just in corporate boards and Navy ships, but also in appellate courts and in all kinds of, you know, corners of the workforce. And so the book kind of grew out of that.
When you talk about critical mass, the numbers are there in the public sector, but not in the private. Why?
There are a number of reasons, and that was one of the sort of striking findings of the book, that the public sector is reaching critical mass in all three branches of the government. And that's striking because 10 years ago, it was the private sector that led the public sector.
Yeah.
But they haven't made any progress since. And that's sort of for a number of reasons. One, women vote a lot more than men do, about 10% more on average, and so they tend to swing elections. And two, there's much more of a sense of accountability to voters and to the public and to the press in the public sector than you have in the private sector. Three, you have much stronger unions in the public sector than you do in the private sector, so it's a lot harder to sort of fire a woman or edge them out when they have children. And then four, there's just an easier on-ramping in the public sector than there is in the private sector. So if you look at New Hampshire, for example, it's the most representative democracy in our nation. It has a lower house of more than 400 members representing 3 million people. And it's a very small leap to go from running from school board to state legislature. And it's a part-time job like it is in 34 other states. Women who have children can easily do it. And as their kids get older, they can then spend more time there. They can run for higher office. They can start chairing committees. At one point in the last 5 years, the entire delegation was women, right? So two members of the House, two members of the Senate, the governor, the lieutenant governor, the AG, all women. And that shows you how women in the public sector have a much easier on-ramping path than women in the private sector, which tends to be all or nothing. You're working full-time or not at all, and there's not a lot of part-time prospects.
You and I both covered Washington, and Washington can be a very male-dominated place. I want you to take me back to President Obama's first term and this meeting where the two female deputy chiefs of staff, Alyssa Mastromonaco and Nancy Ann DeParle, barge into the Oval Office. What happened?
So, as you know, as when we covered it together, the Obama White House started out very much as a boys' club. And the women really had a hard time breaking through. They had a hard time being heard. And it got so bad, but by the end of the first year, they had a dinner with him in the residence, and they basically aired all these complaints about how they weren't making any headway and no one was listening to them. And the president listened to them, but then basically said, you know what, step up. There's no real excuse for this. You guys have got to rely on each other. You guys have got to get each other's backs. And he almost offhandedly at the end of the dinner suggested that they started getting together regularly themselves. And up until that point, the women of the White House didn't really know each other that well. When they started to get together following the president's advice, they started to really realize that they needed to kind of work together the way the men work together. And that is, you know, like form social bonds, but also protect each other. And they really began began to then have real critical mass. They began to really have an impact. And in this scene that you're talking about, it was Nancy Andaparo, Alyssa Mastromonaco, and Stephanie Cutter, and they'd been cut out of meetings having to do with the debt ceiling negotiations, the big grand bargain negotiations in the middle of 2011. And so they heard about a meeting one Sunday where the president was having with David Plouffe, who's his political advisor, and his chief of staff, Bill Daley, in the Oval. And they just sort of were like, you know what? This is ridiculous. We're just gonna walk into the meeting. And they just barged into the Oval Office uninvited and sat down and started participating in the meeting as if nothing was wry. And the guys just kind of looked at them, and the president said, "Well, hi, guys." And they were like, "Hi." And everyone got the point. and after that, they were never excluded again.
Valerie Jarrett was one of the president's closest confidants. What was her White House experience like?
So Valerie is best friends with both the president and with the first lady, and she was there throughout all the meetings in the White House. She was there when the women at the dinner, when women felt disgruntled and they took their concerns to the president. She helped the women start monthly dinners, which they continue to this day, that she still somewhat oversees. So she's been a force in bringing these issues to the forefront in terms of policy.
But there's an ooh in your voice when I ask that.
Well, you know, she's very loyal to the president and to the first lady. And I think that she didn't take kindly to the suggestion that women were somehow being discriminated against when this first happened early on. But ultimately, she did, you know, she did organize the monthly dinners and she did become very much a champion of the issues and a champion of a lot of the women in the White House.
I have one last question for you. You dedicate this book to your mother, who died a few years ago, who worked for the United Nations in a very male-dominated era. What do you wish she'd seen?
I wish she'd seen. My mom, you know, had such a hard time at work, and she really faced so much harassment, and she was miserable. And I often saw her crying, just weeping at the kitchen table as a child. And so I guess I'd like for her to see that, you know, as alone as she was in her career, I have a whole class of friends, of colleagues who are women who are with me. And so that when I face something akin to what she faced, which is actually rarer and rarer these days, I have a whole group of people around me to support me, and I'm not alone. And that, to me, is the power of critical mass, that we don't feel like the odd person out or the odd couple of people out, that we have each other to support each other, to talk things through, and it helps us succeed and helps us get further in our careers. And I wish that she'd been able to see that.
Jay Newton Small, Washington correspondent for Time Magazine, thank you.
Thank you.
Newton Small's book, Broad Influence, How Women Are Changing the Way America Works, is out now.